The headlines: U.S. officials say the White House will soon announce a new military aid package for Ukraine, which includes a Patriot missile battery and precision-guided bombs for fighter jets. An investigation reveals Twitter worked with the Pentagon to amplify propaganda about U.S. military activities in the Middle East, allowing fake accounts to push pro-Washington narratives. Hamas slams Israel for refusing to hand over the body of a jailed Palestinian commander who died due to medical negligence. Hello and welcome, everybody. Here in the Iranian capital, Tehran, this is World News. Our top story for this half hour: the U.S. is set to announce an additional military aid package for Ukraine despite Russia's warnings against the delivery of advanced equipment to Kiev. According to U.S. officials, $1.8 billion worth of new military aid will for the first time include a Patriot missile battery and precision-guided bombs. The officials described the details of the package on condition of anonymity. The U.S. has already provided Ukraine with more than $19 billion in military aid. Russia had earlier warned the U.S. against sending such advanced military equipment to Ukraine. Moscow said it would consider the move as a provocative step and that the equipment would be a legitimate target. Meanwhile, the White House says the Ukrainian president will meet his American counterpart Joe Biden and address Congress. Today, Zelensky's visit to Washington is his first trip abroad since Russia launched its military offensive in Ukraine back in February. While strikes over pay and working conditions keep widening in the UK, now ambulance workers, including paramedics and call handlers, have joined the industrial action. New walkouts have prompted warnings from healthcare leaders. At least three ambulance services, however, say they would prioritize treatment for those most in need. The government plans to replace 750 military personnel to drive ambulances and perform logistics roles. The strike comes a day after nurses took to the picket lines for the second time, paralyzing the National Health Service. The increasing costs of food and energy have angered workers in various public and private sectors. The walkouts have intensified just days before Christmas. Railway workers and passport control officers have also threatened they would ruin the holiday season if their demands are not met. An opinion poll shows two-thirds of Britain support strikes over the pay dispute. News review, where we look deeper into some of the top stories of the day. On this segment of the program, a new investigation shows Twitter helped the U.S. military amplify its online propaganda campaigns about its activities in West Asia. The probe was carried out by a journalist based on internal documents released by Elon Musk, who took over as Twitter's CEO in October. It reveals that Twitter created a special whitelist in 2017 to grant accounts run by the U.S. Central Command more visibility. In some cases, the accounts even used fake profiles and bios to give the impression that they were run by civilians in West Asia. At the top of the campaign's agenda was spreading criticism of Iran and showing support for the U.S.-backed and Saudi-led war on Yemen. The journalists found that the collusion continued until at least May of this year. For years, Twitter has claimed that it deletes any government-backed covert propaganda campaigns worldwide. Joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have author and commentator John Stepling, who's joining us from Indore, Norway. Also, we have director of Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies, Mr. Tim Anderson, who's with us from Sydney. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Stepling. John, this new investigation apparently shows Twitter helped the U.S. military amplify its online propaganda campaigns about some of its activities and interventions in West Asia. How do you perceive these recent findings?
Well, you know, it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody that the United States engages in propaganda on social media. I mean, it's done so for years and years. You pick any platform you want, whether it's Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, whatever. They all very carefully vet radical voices. They suspend accounts of people who express opinions that are too radical, too contrary to the message that the U.S. government in particular wants to get across. And the so-called Twitter files story, the reveal of this feels suspiciously like a limited hangout. I mean, one of the things that Musk said when he bought the company was that Twitter had been heavily biased in favor of the left, and was unfairly censoring far right and so forth. And he wanted to, you know, he was advertising himself as a free speech absolutist of some sort. But this is nonsense. This is the left in fact was just disappeared. The real left, what he was calling the left, was a kind of liberal, moderate liberal political perspective. And so what social media platforms do, and what Twitter had been doing, and what Musk was reinforcing, was a redrawing of the political map, so that in fact real hard left voices were just invisible, and or, like in the case of an outlet like Off Guardian, just as one example, you can find them, but there is a huge warning if you try to link to their site, and this is true of other outlets too. You get a warning saying this is an unsafe site, you should turn back and not link to it, and so forth. You are eventually allowed to in most cases, but some, of course, have been completely suspended, terminated, and not reinstated. So, you know, as I say, this feels like a limited hangout. It's a controlled reveal of something that any moderately educated person should understand already. The U.S. government engages in massive propaganda campaigns across every medium you can think of, and certainly targets countries like Iran, Russia, Venezuela, you know, Syria. You can't say anything positive about Iran, for example, and not get flagged. So I don't know. It should be obvious. I mean, even Newsweek wrote a story, I don't know, a while back about the U.S. government employing fake accounts, thousands of fake accounts, to shape public opinion. So this doesn't feel like exactly an earth-shaking revelation. This is something that's has been well established for a long time. The U.S. controls media. It's part of their propaganda arm.
Mr. Anderson, I want to get your thoughts on this investigation as well. Mr. Stepling believes that this is not too much of a surprise, but elaborate on that for us, if you may. Also, what was this collusion intended to achieve?
Well, in a general sense, yes, to give special treatment to U.S. defense officials in particular. I think this is best understood as a deepening of what we understand the institutional biases of Twitter, basically, which is, after all, a U.S. social media company like Instagram and Facebook and the other big ones, basically. You know, the Chinese ones are not as widespread. The Russian VK is getting bigger, but the U.S. social media giants are the biggest. Now, Facebook has been the most censorial in the sense that they began under the Trump administration to collaborate directly with the U.S. administration to ban accounts. For example, my account was banned 2 years ago on the basis of several reports on the funeral of Soleimani and some more positive comments about Qasem Soleimani, including a speech by his daughter. This was a dangerous person and simply eliminated. So Facebook was very intolerant. Twitter, in a relative sense, in terms of the social media, has been more tolerant, it has to be said, despite the fact that we know that they have been banning accounts, that they put these flags on, you know, Cuban-sponsored media, Syrian-sponsored media, Venezuela, Iran, and so on, all down the line. There are quite dozens of them, but they don't flag U.S. state media like Voice of America or the BBC and so on. We know that there's that institutional bias there. Now, this report by a guy called Li Fang, a journalist with The Intercept, and his full reports on The Intercept, goes a little bit deeper in the sense that he did get access to internal files, not all of them, but internal files as a result of this initiative by Elon Musk, and has found that there were specific requests from Pentagon officials in CENTCOM, which is the U.S. Term for its military, which arrogates to itself the right to have responsibility for, in their words, most of the Middle East, basically. That these officials from CENTCOM went to Twitter and said, listen, our accounts are not doing as well as they might. What happened? Is there some block there? And it emerged that Twitter then gave them privileged access so that their fake accounts in many cases, which were saying things like, oh, our drone strikes on Yemen just killed terrorists and not civilians, and amplifying the messages of the US proxy terrorist groups in Syria and, you know, anti-Iran propaganda and so on, that a number of fake accounts, which of course they were saying that they were deleting from other independent states, were being effectively amplified on the Twitter platform. So I think it deepens our understanding of how this institutional bias works in the one arm of one of the big US social media, Twitter.
Thanks a lot, gentlemen. Author and commentator John Stepling joining us from Andorra, Norway. Also, director of the Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies, Mr. Tim Anderson, joining us from Sydney. With that, it brings us to an end here on this edition of the News Review. Welcome back. Israel's Minister of Military Affairs says the regime won't return the body of a senior Palestinian commander who died in an Israeli jail due to medical negligence. Benny Gantz has made the decision based on recommendations from Israeli officials on keeping bodies for the purpose of exchanging them with Israeli captives. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has censured the move, saying it shows the international community's inability to stop in stopping Israel's terroristic behavior toward Palestinians. Nasser Abu Hamid, commander of the Fatah movement, who died of cancer, has infuriated Palestinians. Israel is accused of denying medical treatment to Palestinian inmates.
Another Palestinian prisoner seen by many here as a hero and an icon died in an Israeli jail. Cancer-stricken prisoner Nasser Abu Hamid, the leader of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades in Ramallah, died early Tuesday as the Israeli authorities refused to release him alive despite growing calls for his release following his late diagnosis with cancer more than a year ago. Nasser was arrested at the end of the Second Intifada in 2002. He was sentenced to 7 life sentences and another 50 years for deadly operations he carried out and organized.
I visited Nasser yesterday in hospital when his health was deteriorating. I recited verses of Quran for him because I knew it was going to be the last time I see him. Nothing will relieve us now but to have Nasser's body and hold his funeral procession and burial ceremony here. I don't want Nasser to be withheld in the occupation's mortuaries.
A general strike and a day of anger and mourning has been declared in the occupied Ramallah and other West Bank areas following the death of Nasser. Here at Al-Amari refugee camp where Nasser lived, protests have taken place with hundreds of Palestinian fighters participating. Nasser has left behind him 4 imprisoned siblings, also serving consecutive life sentences. He joined his brother Abdul Hamid, who was killed by Israeli forces in 2002.
Nasser has joined the martyrs convoy and we are all on the same path. Today, all the Palestinians are sad for his death. He was a resistance leader. I don't say so because he was my brother. Since he was a teenager, he used to fight against the Israeli soldiers. He was always among the first fighters in every operation.
Israeli authorities continue their crimes of medical negligence of Palestinian prisoners in violation of all international laws. First, they kidnapped the prisoners and kept them behind bars for lengthy years. Then they refused to offer them appropriate medications until they die while they refused to release their bodies, an act that represents other forms of crimes.
233 Palestinian prisoners died in Israeli jails since 1967, many of them because of medical negligence. Israel today withholds in its mortuaries the bodies of 11 prisoners, including Nasser Abu Hamid.
Even after his martyrdom in Israeli jails, the Tel Aviv regime continues to withhold Nasser Abu Hamid's body, a move Palestinians say is meant to punish his family, who say he has the right to a decent funeral procession and burial. Mona Qandil, Al-Amari refugee camp, occupied Ramallah.
Elsewhere, the Iranian foreign minister says his Saudi counterpart has assured him of Riyadh's willingness to resume dialogue with Tehran. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remarks in a Twitter post after talks with the Saudi foreign minister on the sidelines of the Baghdad 2 summit in Jordan on Tuesday. The key regional players have already held several rounds of talks mediated by Iraq to resolve their differences. Nearly 2 weeks ago, top Saudi diplomat Faisal bin Farhan al-Saud said his country continues to extend its hand to Iran for a positive relationship. Diplomatic relations between the two countries broke off in 2016 after Riyadh executed a prominent Saudi cleric. Afghanistan's de facto Taliban government has banned university education for women nationwide. The Taliban authorities have informed all government and private universities that female education is suspended until further notice. The ban comes less than 3 months after the university entrance exams were held across the war-torn country. The universities are currently closed for winter break. The Taliban had blocked girls from secondary school education in March. Meanwhile, the UN chief said that he was deeply alarmed by the ban. A spokesman for Antonio Guterres described the Taliban's move as a violation of equal rights for women and girls, saying that it will have devastating impact on the country's future. Since returning to power in last August, the Taliban have been facing criticism for restricting women from education and jobs. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Role of Erdogan power's policies and recent bitter events in Iran is obvious. This is the part of speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on October 3, 2022, during the joint graduation ceremony for the cadets studying in the academies of the Islamic Republic of Iran's armed forces. This ceremony was held in Imam Hassan al-Mushtaba alayhi salam University of Officer and Police Training. Now, what is the motive of these foreign governments? My perception is that they feel that the country is progressing towards achieving a comprehensive power, and they cannot tolerate this. They have made plans. They have designed plans to close down the universities, for the youth to be preoccupied, for the state officials to have new things to deal with, and to create issues in the northwest and southeast of the country. These are all preoccupying. These are all schemes being made and carried out to stop the country's progressive movement. But they are mistaken about both the northwest and the southwest. I've lived with the Baluch people. They are some of the most loyal ethnicities to the Islamic Revolution and the Islamic Republic. The Kurds are one of the most advanced Iranian ethnicities. They care about their homeland. They care about Islam, and they care about the Islamic system. The enemy's schemes will not work, but they work on them anyway. These things show the enemy's true intentions. This is the enemy that claims in its diplomatic statements that they do not want to attack Iran. They do not want to change the system of the Islamic Republic. They are not our enemies, and they are with the people of Iran.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The inner reality of that enemy is what we are saying. The inner reality of this enemy is conspiracy. Creating riots, disrupting the safety of the country, and exciting those who can be easily excited to go into the streets. This is the enemy's inner reality. They are not just against the Islamic Republic. they are against Iran. The U.S. is against a strong Iran and against an independent Iran. The Islamic Republic is not the only issue they are fighting. Of course, they have a strong, deep animosity towards the Islamic Republic. There is no doubt about that. But even without the Islamic Republic, they are against an Iran that is strong. They are against an Iran that is independent.
You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
An Israeli settler has run over two Palestinian brothers near the city of Nablus in the north of the occupied West Bank, making them the latest victims of Israeli settler crimes. According to Palestinian media, Mohammad Mutair and his brother Mohannad had stopped their vehicle by the side of the road near the Zatara military checkpoint south of Nablus to fix a flat tire. It was then that an Israeli settler hit the siblings, who were traveling around with their family members at the time, and fled the scene. The victim's relatives said that 28-year-old Mohammed was killed immediately after being trampled on by the settler, while his brother, 24-year-old Mohannad, was seriously injured in the same accident and was later announced dead due to his injuries. Reacting to the atrocity, Hazem Qasem, a spokesman for the Gaza Strip-based Hamas-Palestinian resistance movement, said the settlers are escalating their aggression against Palestinians. He added that the formation of the new right-wing government in Israel has apparently emboldened settlers to ratchet up their crimes against Palestinians. He described the incident as a new episode in the series of, quote, Zionist terrorism under the protection of the regime's police and army, saying this crime must be answered by increasing the resistance in the West Bank. Israeli occupation soldiers and settlers have been noticeably escalating their attacks against Palestinian civilians in the West Bank and other areas, in an attempt to forcibly expel Palestinians from their lands and make way for expanding Israeli settlements. Israeli forces have also been conducting overnight raids and killings in the northern occupied West Bank, mainly in the cities of Jenin and Nablus, where new groups of Palestinian resistance fighters have been formed. Since the start of 2022, Israeli troops have killed more than 210 Palestinians, including more than 50 children, in the occupied West Bank and East Al-Quds, as well as the besieged Gaza Strip. Earlier, the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs described 2022 as the deadliest year for Palestinians since 2005, when the UN started to keep a tally of Palestinian fatalities. The world body says Israeli forces have shot dead 19 Palestinians, including 3 children, in different incidents across the occupied territories between November 22nd and December 11th. In addition to the killings, Israeli forces have blocked the main entrances of several villages across the West Bank, disrupting livelihoods of thousands of Palestinians.
Yeah.
scores of Israeli settlers, guarded by police, have stormed the courtyards of Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in occupied Al-Quds under the pretext of celebrating Hanukkah holiday. Earlier, the Israeli police stormed Al-Aqsa and forcibly expelled Palestinians stationed inside, paving the way for the illegal settlers to storm the compound. Israeli forces deployed heavily inside Al-Quds Old City in preparation for securing the settlers' incursions and preventing Palestinians from entering the mosque. Israeli settlers intend to storm Al-Aqsa for 8 days to celebrate the so-called Hanukkah, also known as Festival of Lights, which extends from December 18th to December 26th, as settler groups promoted the storming by announcing free transportation for its members. Israeli groups and extremist settlers had previously called for massive incursions into the holy site during the Hanukkah holidays. Hardline Israeli officials and settlers regularly stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in the occupied city, a provocative move that infuriates Palestinians. Settlers' incursions on Al-Aqsa Mosque frequently trigger clashes that leave casualties among Palestinians. Such acts of violence even led to an 11-day war between Palestinian resistance groups in the besieged Gaza Strip and the Israeli regime in 2021, during which the regime forces killed at least 260 Palestinians, including 66 children. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has condemned the latest raid on Al-Aqsa Mosque by Israeli settlers. Hamas says such incursions are provocative and very dangerous. The movement has urged Palestinians to mobilize immediately in defense of Al-Aqsa Mosque. The resistance movement stressed the Palestinian nation will make sure to protect the mosque under any circumstances, warning Israel of the consequences of raids on the holy site. The Jewish visitation of Al-Aqsa is permitted, but as part of a decades-old agreement between Jordan, the custodian of Islamic and Christian sites in Al-Quds, and Israel in the wake of Israel's occupation of East Al-Quds in 1967, non-Muslim worship at the compound is prohibited.
When it comes to Peru, the country is unraveling quickly. Just last week, Peru's president, Pedro Castillo, was removed from office. His charge, rebellion, which came after he announced that he would shut down Congress and install a government of exception. This occurred just before he was due to face an impeachment vote. Then came his arrest, charged with allegedly breaching constitutional order. But these accusations were not enough. He was also accused of an attempted coup. Enter Castillo's vice president, Dina Boluarte. She also accused the president of a coup attempt. And just a few short hours later, she was sworn in as the new president, becoming the first female head of state in Peru's history. Boluarte called for a political truce and the installation of a national unity government. No surprise that the coup set up mass protests all across Peru. This is while the unelected government ordered a violent crackdown, with police to have killed numerous protesters. Yet things have moved rather too quickly, leading one to conclude that there may be foreign hands at play, in this instance, from the U.S. For example, just 2 days before a coup against its elected President Castillo, the ex-CIA agent and U.S. ambassador to Peru, Lisa Kenna, met with Peru's defense minister. And there are reports that Peru's defense minister, who's a retired brigadier general, ordered the military to turn against Castillo. The U.S. ambassador to Peru, Lisa Kenna, met with Peru's unelected leader, Dina Boluarte, and reiterated Washington's wholehearted support. Kenna, in another post, tweeted, "The U.S. categorically rejects any extra constitutional act by President Castillo to prevent Congress from fulfilling its mandate." This all showed that the U.S. government had staunchly supported Peru's unelected administration. In a statement, the U.S. State Department stated, "The U.S. commends Peru's institutions and authorities for safeguarding democratic stability. Troubled by violent demonstrations and reports of attacks on the press and private property, the U.S. recognizes Dina Boluarte as the country's president."
Thank you.
When Castillo moved to dissolve Congress, he cited Article 134, and he made it clear that it was only going to be a temporary closure. He said new congressional elections would be held as soon as possible. Yet the U.S. ambassador to Peru failed to mention Article 134 of Peru's constitution, which states, "The President of the Republic is authorized to dissolve Congress if it has censured or denied its confidence to two councils of ministers." The dissolution decree contains the call for elections for a new Congress. The U.S. Ambassador Kenna ignored all of this. Instead, she declared, "The U.S. emphatically urges President Castillo to reverse his attempt to close Congress and allow the democratic institutions of Peru to function according to the Constitution." By this, the CIA veteran meant that Castillo should simply allow the anti-democratic Congress to launch a coup against him. The U.S. Embassy in Peru subsequently published an official statement echoing exactly what Kenna had said. This was Washington's green light for Peru's right-wing dominated Congress to overthrow President Castillo and for the state security services to arrest him without trial. So it's no surprise there have been headlines that read, "The U.S. egged on the coup in Peru." The move by Pedro Castillo to dissolve Congress ahead of a third impeachment motion seems to be the result of a pressure campaign with support from the U.S. But why would the U.S. be interested in a coup in Peru? One motivation behind the U.S. could be in Peru's natural resources. Peru has a wealth of mineral resources like copper, iron, lead, and zinc. Gold and silver are also found extensively. On the other hand, the U.S. has been against the group of left-wing presidents who have taken over in Latin America in what's called the pink tide, with many not leaning so much towards the West's economic and financial system, like from the U.S. After all, they did not reap the rewards that a Western capital system offers, which has turned out to be just a mirage. Brazil's President Lula da Silva has even said that it wants to move away from the dollar and decrease the dependency as much as possible. The CIA has organized many coups against democratically elected left-wing leaders in Latin America, from Guatemala's President Jacobo Arbenz in 1954, to Chile's President Salvador Allende in 1973, not to mention the attempts to remove the former Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez.
Japan is allocating $320 billion in an effort to build up its military, a move that would be unthinkable under previous administrations. But now, under the Liberal Democratic Party led by Prime Minister Fumio Kishida, surveys say the budget has the favor of over 70% of voters. The military developments include extending the range of Japan's missiles, stockpiling of spare parts and other munitions, reinforcing logistics, developing cyber warfare capabilities, and cooperating more with U.S. and other like-minded countries. The extension of the range of Japanese missiles is only meant to be able to reach China, if the need were to ever arise, as there is no other reason to extend the range to around 1,000 kilometers. The reason why Japan feels the need to advance its missile technology is the escalation of tensions in the Indo-Pacific region. North Korea has, on multiple occasions, tested intercontinental ballistic missiles capable of carrying nuclear warheads, one of which landed a little too close for comfort to Japan. The China-Taiwan tensions are also cause for concern for Japan, as a potential military escalation could put Japan in danger as well. This is because of the large number of troops and massive amounts of supplies that the U.S. has stationed in Japan, which they would most likely take advantage of in case of an escalation with Taiwan. Here's what Prime Minister Kishida said with regards to the military build-up plan.
"We can feel a rapid increase in the severity of the security environment around our country. In countries and the regions surrounding our country, a strengthening of nuclear and missile capabilities, a rapid military build-up, and attempts to unilaterally change the status quo through power are becoming more pronounced."
Kishida also emphasized on the issue of China as a challenge to its security. He said, "China's current external stance and military trends are a challenge to our country's peace and security, the securing of global peace and stability, and the enhancement of international order based on the rule of law." To which Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin responded by saying, "Japan disregards the facts, deviates from the common understandings between China and Japan, and its commitment to bilateral relations, and discredits China. Japan even believes that Russia is a threat to its security, albeit indirectly. Tokyo sees Russia's war in Ukraine as a dangerous precedent that might encourage China to carry out a similar operation in Taiwan and cause unimaginable disruption to world trade. By taking stances against North Korea, China, and Russia, Japan must look to the US and South Korea as its allies." $320 billion. Once the budget is injected into Japan's military, it will bump up Japan's ranking among the top military spenders in the world from 8th place all the way up to 3rd place, just below the US and China, even higher than Russia during a time of war. And this amount of expenditure is going to hurt Japanese economy. Kishida's plans will double Japan's defense outlays to about 2% of the country's gross domestic product over the next 5 years. It would also mean that Japan's defense ministry will now have 10% of the country's entire annual public spending. In the document that outlines the plan for the military expenditures, what is not included is how the money will come about. It's unclear whether the government will have to raise money through tax increases or whether it will borrow the money. But if we look at the reason behind this unprecedented amount of spending on military by Japan, that is known for its pacifist constitution, we will realize that if not for the US's recent provocative actions, Japan would not deem its security threatened. North Korea's ICBM missile tests only came about as a result of US provocations, and the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has mentioned this on multiple occasions. With regards to the issue of Taiwan, if not for the meddling of the US in Taiwan's affairs and the breaking of the One China policy that the US had previously agreed to, China would not have conducted the biggest military exercise in its history. If not for the constant eastward expansion of NATO, spearheaded by the US, the war in Ukraine would also not have happened, and Japan's concerns over Russia encouraging China to also attack Taiwan would never come to be. It's almost as if Japan's alliance with the US is costing them more money than it's bringing in, and that is completely disregarding the security risks that this alliance has brought upon the land of the rising sun.
Iran has rapped the European Union over anti-Tehran measures taken by the Council of the European Union. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian denounced, quote, "certain political shows that have been put on display by the Council under the pretext of defending the issue of human rights." The European Council has imposed a slew of fresh sanctions against Iranian natural and legal entities. According to a statement issued by the EU foreign ministers, 20 individuals, along with one entity, the Islamic Republic of Iran Broadcasting, have been sanctioned over alleged human rights abuses. The bloc has also slapped sanctions on 4 more people and as many entities blacklisted over Tehran's alleged drone supplies to Russia. The bloc's new sanctions include asset freezes and travel bans to the EU. The ministers condemned what they called the widespread use of force by the Iranian authorities against protesters. The European Union last month imposed sanctions on a number of Iranian institutions and individuals, including the 24-hour English-language press TV news channel, over alleged rights violations following the recent foreign-backed riots in the country.
In the case of Iran, big tech is used as a weapon against Iranians. So Iranian voices don't come out. Iranians lose their, if they are opposed to the Western narrative, they get sanctioned. All of the Iranian media is sanctioned. Many individuals have lost their accounts. I have lost my Facebook and Instagram accounts. So these Western big tech companies they cooperate with Western governments. But in Iran, these same media outlets make threats. They support, they help people make Molotov cocktails, and they help mobilize the riot.
Foreign-backed riots have hit various Iranian provinces since 22-year-old woman Mahsa Amini died at the hospital on September 16th, 3 days after she collapsed at a police station. An investigation has attributed Amini's death to a medical condition rather than alleged beatings by the police. The violent riots have claimed the lives of dozens of people and security forces while also allowing terrorist attacks across the country. In the last 2 months, the terrorists have set fire to public property and tortured several Basiji members and security forces to death. Western states have been hyper-aggressively pushing the regime change agenda in form of hybrid war, making a sheer mockery of international law. Authorities in the US and the EU have openly and brazenly instigated rioters in Iran through official and unofficial channels. Iran's intelligence ministry has said the United States and the United Kingdom were directly involved in the unrest, adding that dozens of terrorists affiliated with the Israeli regime and anti-revolution groups have also been detained in the unrest.
Online, the MEK organization that's funded by and supported by NATO, they've been teaching people how to make Molotov cocktails, how to use weapons, and they've been attacking police bases, military bases, and also we've had terrorist attacks alongside the Pakistani border, in the no man land in Pakistan, and also in northern Iraq from Iraqi Kurdistan.
Iran says its enemies have waged a hybrid war against the Islamic Republic to weaken national solidarity and hinder the country's progress. Officials say huge amounts of weapons have been shipped into the country by Western and regional intelligence services to carry out terrorist attacks and conduct extensive psychological operations in order to stoke dissatisfaction amongst the Iranian people and make them accuse the Iranian administration for the growing insecurity.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
I would like to take this opportunity to talk about one dimension of the personality of Amir al-Mu'mineen.
السلام عليك يا أمين الله في أرض.
Peace be upon you, O trusted guardian, appointed by Allah.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother.
Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
تبقى عيني بدمع مشتاقيا قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبيب لها ولا راغي
Ali's faith. Ali's spiritual virtues are related to faith, which is above all virtues. For faith in man will lead him to the eternal blessing of paradise and divine pleasure, and he will be rescued from the painful punishment of hell. On polytheism, which is the opposite of faith, Allah Almighty says, "Surely Allah does not forgive that anything should be associated with him, and he forgives what is besides this to whom he pleases." In fact, Imam Ali was the one who toppled all the idols from Kaaba when he put his feet on the Holy Prophet's shoulders and went up to the roof of Kaaba. Reporting Ibn Maryam on the authority of Imam Ali, Ahmad ibn Hanbal says, "The Messenger of Allah and I went to the sacred mosque. When we reached Kaaba, the Holy Prophet said, 'Sit down.' I sat down. He put his feet on my shoulders so that I will raise him to the roof of Kaaba. As a result of heaviness of prophethood, I was not able to rise up. Finding me in this position, the Holy Prophet took his feet off my shoulders and sat down on the ground. This time the Holy Prophet ordered me to mount his shoulders. I too obeyed his order. The Holy Prophet raised me in a way I could fly in sky. At that time, I set my foot on the roof of Kaaba. I found there the statue of an idol made of copper or lead. I shook it in a way it was unseated. The Holy Prophet said, 'Throw it down.' I threw it down in a way that it shattered into pieces. Then I came down from the roof of Kaaba, leaving the sacred mosque hurriedly along with the Holy Prophet. When we saw the houses of Mecca, we ran more hastily, lest the people of Mecca should see us."
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the program's to my brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali, alayhi salam. Dear friends, in this beautiful statements of the universal persona of Imam Ali, alayhi salam, we find that His Eminence, the first divinely appointed Imam, he speaks about this organ or this part of the human body known as the heart. Now, of course, the heart being the center of the love for Allah, and it being the center where it is the abode of Allah, we find that this heart is something which needs to be protected. When the heart is perfected, and the soul is perfected, and the intellect is perfected, well, then that is how we reach salvation. Now, of course, trying to reach the ultimate perfection is something which is very difficult, and ultimately the ultimate perfection is Allah, and nobody can reach that level of perfection. But when we find that in human terms, the perfection of a human being, and the perfect human being, of course, was the Holy Prophet, and after him, the divinely appointed Imams. The heart has a huge role to play. We find that along with their souls and their intellects, their hearts were also perfect and pure. And so along these lines, we find that Imam Ali alayhi salam, he speaks about the heart and he says that if the heart gains security and tranquility, it will be overtaken by vanity. Now, sometimes in our lives as Muslims, or even as non-Muslims, we ask this question as to, well, why do we have insecurity, or we have this turbulent, unstable times in our lives? Now, one of the solutions or one of the reasons can potentially be in this tradition, that if one has too much security and too much stability and too much tranquility and just too much, then what happens is a human being becomes vain. And I mean, there is a lot of truth to this. So when everything is going our way and everything is just rosy and, you know, the world is just perfect, then we start to slip. We start to relax, right? We might not read our salah. We might not read the Quran anymore. We might not thank Allah. We might not be humble in front of Allah. Why? Well, because we have everything that we want. So why worry about all these other things, such as reading the Quran or reading supplications or doing the salah on time? Meaning a certain kind of arrogance and a certain kind of vanity overcomes us and our hearts. And so this security and tranquility, and because this is a translation from Arabic, we kind of have to understand what the context is. So this doesn't mean, you know, by security, it doesn't mean go and live in like a war zone. No, this security means that as an individual, you feel like you are safe from, for example, the fires of hell and the disobedience of Allah. This is the security that's being talked about. And tranquility, this doesn't mean that we should live, you know, a difficult, pauper life and, you know, make sure that our life is always unstable and chaotic. No, here by tranquility, what it really means is that, you know, as an individual, we should not feel like, you know, just put your legs up on the table type thing and everything is okay, there's no problem, you know, I don't need to worry about, you know, my prayers, I don't need to worry about my hereafter. It's kind of this negligence more than tranquility. And of course, as Imam Ali says, if this kind of security in this meaning and this kind of tranquility in this meaning overtakes a person's heart, in result, it will become arrogant, it will become vain, and of course, it will become ruined. Profound and very deep and beautiful lessons brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRib English Radio, the program To My Brother. This moment, I invite you to listen to the Arabic text of Ziyara Aminullah along with the English translation. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. اللهم إن قلوب المخبتين إليك والها وسبل الراغبين إليك شارعا وعلى القاصدين.
O Allah, verily the hearts of those who surrender to Thee are full of passionate love. The path of those who long for Thee is the straight, true road. The instructions given by those who lead on Thee
are distinct and precise. The minds of those who are aware of thy reality are filled with awe and reverence. The call of those who invite unto thee is loud and clear, and the doors of approval are kept open for them. Whoso submits a supplication to thee receives a favorable answer. Whoso turns repentant unto thee gets acceptance and amnesty. Whoso bursts into tears in fear of thy punishment obtains mercy. Whoso seeks redress from thee finds the required assistance at his disposal. Whoso asks for thy help procures the aid as a gift. Thy promise made with thy servants is fulfilled. Whoso asks for pardon of his errors finds them reduced to nothing. Whoso does everything for thy sake discovers that each and every deed has been preserved. The means of livelihood available to the created being come from thee like a rainfall, and in addition, many recurring favors and bounties reach them in regular succession. The sin of those who ask for forgiveness are overlooked. The wants and needs of all that which has been created by thee are properly satisfied. Those who put forward genuine demands get more than they ask for, one after the other, again and again. For the hungry, wholesome food is arranged. For the thirsty, clean water is available in abundance.
Now we invite you to listen to Brother Hassanain Rajabali.
You find it, by the way, Imam Ali alayhi salam, this will that he gives to his son. It's a long will, but I've just extracted a few verses from it for you and I to get the feeling that if anybody who doesn't know him, and those of us that know him, should understand the quality of this man, that a great fighter he was, indomitable. He kills Marhab, splits him in half, cuts the legs of Amr ibn Abu Wud, and he defeats every person in the battlefield. No man could even touch him. Even Wahshi, who killed Hamza, was afraid of Imam Ali, terrified of him. He said, this man is in connection with God. Yet in his salah, he was the best. Imam Zain al-Abidin, when people said, your knees are buckling, oh, Sayyid al-Sajideen. Imam says, I am ashamed. He said, why are you ashamed? He said, my grandfather was better. My grandfather's sujood was better than mine. Though he's an imam. Awwaluna Muhammad, wa awsatuna Muhammad, wa akhiruna Muhammad, wa kulluna Muhammad. Yet look at the humbleness. They say Imam Ali alayhi salam's prayer was such of high caliber that the Sufis of today, those who follow the tariqas and the mathnavis in different places where the spiritual domain is in the esoteric world, unfortunately many have disconnected from Ahlul Bayt. Some of them have disconnected from the Quran. The two heavy things that Allah left us with, they disconnected. But they found the spiritual world, which Imam Ali displayed in his activities when he was talking to his Lord, was so beautiful and sweet. They decided to emulate that part. Even at that level, you find it's Imam Ali who's the father of all the Sufis. You go back to any Sufi school of thought, you will see that their master was Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali ibn Abi Talib, alayhi salatu wasalam. What a lesson for you and I. That today the world loves him and hates him. But Imam Ali alayhi salam is also showing us the quality that you and I should follow. Look at his wisdom.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.